TED Audio Collective.
After the racial reckoning in America during the summer of 2020, many employees, particularly people of color and women, wanted to know what their organizations were doing to increase diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace. They demanded change. We received similar inquiries at Columbia Business School, and in response, we formed a Race, Diversity, and Inclusion Task Force. The goal was to thoroughly understand the experiences of students, faculty, staff, and alumni, and develop recommendations to ensure the educational environment we offered was inclusive and anti-racist. I co-chaired this 32-person task force, which held listening sessions with different members of the community. And you know what the hardest part of these listening sessions was? Listening. And not interrupting, or justifying, or correcting, or whatevering. For instance, people would say things like, the school needs to do XYZ. And rather than saying, we have a database that does just that, and we even made it user-friendly so you can get that information with one click, we just sat and listened, which was the right response, because it's incredibly important to honor the voices and experiences of those willing to share their thoughts. Not to mention, if they weren't aware of the existing system in place, then clearly there was some disconnect we needed to own. So in situations like this, one question that emerges is how do we engage people in the right way without alienating them, appearing defensive, or being performative? And how do we balance all of these things, especially when dealing with difficult situations in the context of workplace activism? How do we manage the tension between acting, reacting, connecting, and just listening? I'm Madhupa Akinola. This is TED Business. Our speaker today is Megan Raitz, an author and professor at Holt International Business School, whose work focuses on the intersection of leadership, dialogue, and mindfulness. In this talk, Megan examines what it means to lead in this new age of employee activism. She breaks down exactly what employees want from their organizations and explains how leaders can rise to the challenge of building inclusive, proactive, and productive workplaces. Then after the talk, I'll break down how leaders can learn a thing or two from activists in their organizations. And spoiler alert, this work isn't easy. But first, a quick break.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com, designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hi, I'm Frances Fry.
And I'm Ann Morris.
And we are the hosts of a new TED podcast called Fixable.
We've helped leaders at some of the world's most competitive companies solve all kinds of problems.
On our show, we'll pull back the curtain and give you the type of honest, unfiltered advice we usually reserve for top executives.
Maybe you have a coworker with boundary issues, or you want to know how to inspire and motivate your team.
Give us a call, and we'll help you solve the problems you're stuck on.
Find Fixable wherever you listen.
Speak up!
Bring your whole selves to work. Be the difference that you want to see. Sound familiar? Started to sound very familiar to quite a few employees. Now, many leaders are asking voices of difference to speak up. And that's because what gets said and what doesn't in our workplaces has a huge consequence for things like ethical conduct, innovation, inclusion, talent retention. So more and more employees at the moment are starting to speak up about social and environmental concerns. And this is great, but it's not always going quite to plan for everybody. A finance director I've been working with, he's been asking his employees to speak up for quite a while, and now they've started to. So they're saying, OK, let's talk about race. Let's talk about gender equity. Climate change, I want to talk about that. Modern slavery. And this finance director came to me somewhat stunned and said, you know, Megan, I've got to admit, when I ask people to speak up, I was kind of thinking that I'd get more transparency around compliance issues and a few good ideas. I didn't really bank on getting everything else. But this is an era of employee activism, and that's great. But why does it end up on the front pages of the newspaper for the wrong reasons sometimes? Employees walking out, getting fired, taking to social media, organizational reputations destroyed, or investors seeking change at the top of organizations. So my research over the past few years with John Higgins has involved interviewing hundreds of activists and leaders and activist leaders. And our work's in service of enabling voices of difference to make a difference in the workplace. Now, today I'm just going to draw out four key findings. And I'm also going to go through a few do's and don'ts for leaders who want to navigate this territory proactively, productively. So let me start with a question. When I say the word activist, what comes to mind? What images, what thoughts, what assumptions? Well, we've asked thousands of people that question. And I can safely say that the words activist and activism are loaded terms. They mean everything from progress and courage and passion and change through to protest, rebellion, violence. It's quite cool to be labelled an activist in some parts of the world and in relation to some issues. And in other parts of the world, and in relation to other issues, being labelled an activist is life-threatening. So we need to understand the assumptions and the associations that we bring to activism, because, of course, that affects how we respond to it. I was working with the board of a healthcare organisation, and in the coffee break, they started to talk about an employee who'd been pretty vocal on the internal comms channels about climate change. And he was quite critical of what the organisation had been doing. It was really interesting because some of the executives labelled him as a troublemaker, kind of wanted to get rid of him. But there were a few executives that saw him as a trailblazer. And actually a couple that wanted to invite him into the board to educate them, okay? So we've got to the first key point for our leaders is to understand that activism is in the eye of the beholder. As Ruchika Tulsyan, author and activist, told us, what looks like rebellion to you is another person's basic human rights. So the first thing you've got to do is really become aware of the kind of assumptions and judgments that you and your colleagues bring to activism in order that you can then respond with more awareness and more mindfulness. Second point, leaders can find themselves in an optimism bubble. We sometimes call it a delusion bubble. As you get more senior, you overestimate the degree to which other people are speaking up. You overestimate your approachability and you overestimate your listening skills. And that all means that you underestimate the strength of feeling that might exist with some of your employees. Now, one of the key reasons for this is something we called advantage blindness. So when we have the labels and titles that convey status and authority in a particular context, like hierarchy, for example, we're often the last person to realize the impact that those labels have on how other people are able to speak up to us. In fact, it's not until we don't have those labels that we can kind of look at them and go, gosh, they make a difference to how people can voice around here. So this point for leaders is all about understanding, you know, are you in one of these optimism bubbles? Are you a bit detached? How do you know what your employees find matters in their organizations? Do you? How? I was talking to the head of a retail organization, and she was saying that her leadership team spend a lot of time in stores, yeah, listening. And she said something I thought was really interesting. She said, you can't delegate your listening responsibility to pulse surveys. Yeah. You've got to show up with your ears wide open. So what this means is don't assume you know what matters. You know, sharpen your antennae. Try and figure out. And we've written about lots of ways that you can do that. But underlying all of those methods is an understanding that it's almost inevitable that you're detached a bit. And you need to do a lot more work, actually, to really find out what matters to employees. So third point, inaction is as political as action. We've met quite a few leaders that say that they're neutral on certain issues or apolitical. There's no such thing. Our inaction on things like climate change is as political as our action. I was working with a HR director in the construction industry, right at the moment where a competitor had said some fairly disparaging things about women in the industry. It's a huge controversy. And this HR director really didn't want to get involved. He just wanted to avoid the conflict, stay out of it. But his employees wouldn't let him because his silence would have communicated complicity. Now, what I am not saying, even though I'm often accused of saying it, what I am not saying is that therefore you need to act on every issue that's out there. Of course you don't, and of course you can't. It's infeasible. What I am saying as a leader is that you need to make conscious, coherent, authentic choices about what you will make a stand on and what you won't. And do that in conjunction with your stakeholders. And of course, your employees are one of your key stakeholders there. Final point is that it's useful to understand what your employees think your response has been to activist issues so far. Not what you think it is, but what do your employees think it's been? And in our research, we came up with a kind of taxonomy of different leadership responses. It starts with non-existent or activism. What activism? We talked to a chief executive in the manufacturing industry, and midway through our conversation, I asked him about climate change and his strategy and stance on environmental issues. And he looked at me utterly baffled. It was nowhere on the agenda. Now, that looks increasingly inconceivable, actually, but it certainly still happens. And then you get suppression, or let's just expel those voices before it spreads. Now, this is where leaders explicitly silence, or implicitly, because employees know that if they do speak up, it'll probably cost them their next promotion. Or indeed, if they do speak up, they might be ignored. We surveyed just over 3,000 employees in a recent project, and just over 1 in 5 employees expect to be ignored if they speak up about wider social and environmental concerns. After that comes something that we call facadism, or let's just say the right things. This is when leaders make proclamations about what's important, and they may even say what they're going to do about it, but nothing happens. In the wake of George Floyd's murder, there were many organizations that made statements of support for the Black Lives Matter movement. When the American Marketing Association investigated things shortly after, they found that less than 1 in 10 had made any concrete changes. Then you get to something we call defensive engagement, or let's just do what the lawyers tell us. Now, this is where leaders do engage on a topic, but only because they really have to. Again, working with a senior team recently in the pharma industry, the issue of diversity and inclusion came up on the agenda. It was dealt with in about 5 minutes. And essentially, they said, let's send everybody on a course and count the number of women. That was kind of as far as it got. They did the bare minimum. And then there's a step change to what we call dialogic engagement, or let's sit down, listen, and learn. And the reason why it's a step change is because leaders here know that they don't know the answer, and they really want to find out what they don't know. Okay? So we talked to an entrepreneur who had taken over an ex-UK car manufacturing plant. And the workers there were very upset about working conditions. And so this entrepreneur decided, in General McChrystal's terms, to share information until it was almost illegal. In other words, he got in the employees and opened up the books, shared information and shared decision-making with them about what they needed to do. And that was a vastly different leadership style from the ones that they've been used to. Now, right at the end, we've got stimulating activism. This is when leaders say, let's be the activist. This is the Ben and Jerry's and the Patagonias of the world. And they recruit activists. They promote activists. They keep hold of activists in their organizations. Now, there's many things that I could take out from this taxonomy. Let me draw just 2 key learnings out here. First of all, you need to know where your employees think your response has been so far, not where you think it's been. Because guess what? Let's go back to that optimism bubble. The more senior you are, the more likely you are to think that you're in dialogue. But if I ask a more junior employee, they're more likely to say, it's a facade. Or even, actually, I'm scared to speak up. And the second key point is dialogue is messy. It's jam-packed full of vulnerability, ambiguity, disagreement. That's why leaders try and avoid it so much. But you can't avoid it any longer. That's not a sustainable strategy. So we need to get far better at experimenting, at expecting fallout, about learning from mistakes. So in summary, we are entering an age of employee activism. And if we can't or won't hear voices of difference in our organisation, we need to consider that like the canary in the coal mine. In other words, a signal of danger. Because if we can't talk about stuff that matters to us, but that we differ on, that spells disaster in our organisations for things like ethical conduct, innovation, inclusion, talent retention, performance. So maybe in the face of some of these enormous social and environmental issues, maybe we're finally starting to reassess what good leadership looks like. Maybe we're starting to see leadership as activism. And in doing that, maybe we'll enable voices of difference to make a difference in the workplace by allowing them to speak truth to power. Thank you.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Summarize with AI in a click. Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
Support for TED Business comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/TED Business. That's odoo.com/TED Business. Odoo, modern management made simple. I feel like Megan's encouraging us to think of activism as another critical dimension of leadership that we need to pay more attention to. So I want to expand on her ideas by digging deeper into some of the research she's conducted with John Higgins. Specifically, what advice do they give leaders looking to lean into an activist role in their organizations? Their first tip, assume you're scarier than you think. Now that's something I have a hard time with, because it's true. People tell me all the time that I'm intimidating, and I've even gotten the nickname Small But Mighty. And I'm like, for real? Which means I'm not always aware of how my power is experienced by others. And I need to make sure I create informal avenues for connection where power dynamics aren't magnified. In other words, don't just rely on formal meetings as your only interaction with your employees. Think about creating different forums or more casual conditions that will help those who are more junior to you feel more comfortable. Like deciding to meet outdoors and going for a walk. Next, question your list of whose opinion counts. Think of the last time you needed a piece of advice or opinion. Who did you go to? What about the time before that? Were they the same race, gender, or level as you? My guess is yes. So the next time you have a burning question, in addition to talking to your regular crew, how about including someone that's different from you on some dimension? You choose whatever dimension that might be. Spice it up. And finally, send speak up rather than shut up signals and responses. Over the past 2 years, you know you've found yourself adjusting your hair, your shirt, fixing your posture, basically looking at your own reflection way more than usual thanks to Zoom. Have you ever noticed yourself frowning or looking distracted or crossing your arms, unintentionally signaling that you might be closed off? Our body language and facial expressions tell a lot. And when we're in positions of power, those signals are being watched even more acutely. So pay attention to the signals you send and be mindful about how they may be interpreted. This is tough, but actively managing these signals in your interactions will help those around you feel seen and respected. Two important factors that encourage people to speak up. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Kiara Powell and fact-checked by Matthias Salas. Special thanks to Anna Phelan, Michelle Quint, Corey Hagem, and Colin Helms. I'm Madhupa Akinola. Talk to you again next week.